me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. This is Jamie Del Rio. He's lived a life of service and community outreach since childhood. After earning his business degree from New York University, the tragic events of September 11th inspired him to pursue his longtime dream of becoming a police officer. He entered the next NYPD Academy class and went on to serve with distinction for 20 years, retiring as a detective second grade. A seasoned motivational speaker, Jamie has a passion for empowering youth. He challenges young people to recognize their potential and step into leadership, captivating them with his down-to-earth style and stories from years on the force. Since retiring, Jamie has continued his commitment to service. He leads a thriving youth group at his local church and has founded Blue Bridge, an initiative dedicated to building trust and connection between law enforcement and urban youth. He also mentors young men through My Brother's Keeper. While his primary audience is often high school and college students, Jamie's message resonates with all ages. He speaks on the importance of legacy, leadership, and making a positive, lasting impact in the lives of others. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Brother, it's really a pleasure that you have graced our stage, and you and I have been on and off before getting on set about so much things that have happened. I can't wait to dive in. Tell us a little bit about how did you get involved into becoming a police officer? And I do understand that there were some tragic events that led to that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So as a little boy, I wanted to be a cop, a fireman, or a wide receiver for the New York Giants. Well, I never played organized football, so obviously that wasn't going to happen. As I got into high school, totally forgot about my childhood desire to be any of those things. Knew I had to go to college. That wasn't even an option in my home. And, I had good grades. I wound up getting a scholarship to NYU, was in the business school, and graduated with a double major in business marketing, business management and marketing. In my senior year, I landed a part-time job with Bank of America, and it was after graduating, while I was working at Bank of America, when 9/11 happened. Ironically enough, my interview for that job was in one of the Twin Towers. Bank of America had offices there, but I was working in Midtown Manhattan. But a couple days later, I mean, we just wanted to do something. Me, my brothers, my father had been down there within minutes after the second tower fell because he was a NYPD clergy liaison. He's a pastor. And I knew he was down there, and I knew all the cops and the firefighter and EMTs, first responders were all down there. And my two older brothers and I, we finally had an opportunity to go down there as volunteers. We just wanted to serve the rescue workers, do something, do whatever we could to help. And so it was just a couple days after 9/11, and it was while I was down there that I was reminded of my childhood desire to be a cop. That's what stood out at me that day. I just had this feeling where if, God forbid, something like this ever happened again, I wanted to be able to respond. I wanted to be a first responder. And so when I went back to my office at Bank of America, I went on the computer, I applied to take the next NYPD exam, and I was in the next police academy the following July. So July 1st, 2002, I started my NYPD career.
You know, it was interesting how these captivating moments change people's life and their trajectory, if you will. For those listeners that were not part of 9/11, some of us have endured COVID and other major catastrophes, but 9/11 was different. It was a situation where it rocked our world, it rocked our nation.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit of where were you exactly, and what was your thought as you saw planes invading our land and our space?
Yeah, I mean, it was unprecedented, and everybody that I talk to about 9/11 knows exactly where they were when it happened. I speak to a lot of high school kids that weren't even alive, and it's kind of hard to even imagine not being here for that event or being so impacted. But I remember being in my office in Midtown, my Bank of America office, and my father called me on my flip cell phone. And he was like, turn on the news. And I didn't realize he was on his way down there, and we didn't even have a TV in my office. So I went downstairs, I went across the street to a pub, and there were two TVs mounted on the wall, and there was a crowd in there, and everyone was just watching. And it was the tower, both were still up. It was while I was in that pub watching on the TVs mounted on the wall, I saw the towers crumble. And everyone was just in absolute disbelief. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was crazy. I went back up to my office, and my bosses were in a panic because they knew they had a bunch of coworkers that were in the Twin Towers. As I said, Bank of America had offices there. And so they immediately were like, just go home, go be with your family. I lived in Lower Manhattan. All the trains and buses were not running, so I walked from Midtown Manhattan to Lower Manhattan, a couple miles. And immediately, I went to my church. I actually lived on the top floor of the church building at that time. And we just, you know, started praying and wanted to do something. I wound up going to. Obviously, I'm not a pastor. I knew my pastor father was down there. I grabbed his clergy plaque from the car, and I went to the nearest hospitals just to go with another pastor's kid, friend of mine. And we just wanted to go, like, pray for people or do something. And then he and I wound up trying to go as far south as possible, as close to the site as we could. But there were now police barricades in place, and unless you had the necessary credentials, you couldn't get through. So the furthest I got was Chinatown, which ironically enough wound up being the very precinct that I got assigned to, you know, later on.
You know, what's interesting is that, and first and foremost, I want to lift up the memory of all the people we lost, but also lift up our listeners who, if we're touching a subject here that may bring bad memories, I want to lift them up and show them honor and respect, and that we're trying to lift at least this portion of our talk around showing the love that they deserve and lifting their memory. I am one to say that in our school history, some of our history books end in such a dormant way, where history ends with Civil War and then it moves on into the civil rights movement, then it goes on to different things. But 9/11 to me is part of what has shaped America to be. There were so many people that flung into action. There was so much that took place. And as you mentioned, we all remember exactly where we were. Ashes, the city is covered in just dust and in pain. It was so much. But let's talk a little bit about, now that you start and you opened the stage, if you will, you mentioned yourself as a youngster growing up and that you wanted to be involved in service. But what kind of influenced you the most to choose the life of helping others? What was so special about that for you?
I would have to say my father, both of my parents, but specifically my father. He's an incredible man. A wild man. When I was 3 years old, so I'm the youngest of three boys. They had three sons, the three J's, Jeremy, Jonathan, and Jamie. And My father, he was a construction worker. He was a painter, taper, and general contractor. He had his own construction company. But he was also a minister, felt called to the Lower East Side of Manhattan to minister in those streets. So when I was 3 years old, again, I was the youngest of the three, he went to the local police precinct in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. So, and this was when it was like really, really bad. And he went to the local police precinct and he said, where are the worst spots in the Lower East Side? So they told him two locations, Avenue D and 3rd Street and Pitt and Stanton. That's where they sell drugs, sell their bodies and kill people. Mm. And he said, I would like permits to those two spots. And they said, okay, what are you going to do? He said, I want to go out there and preach. They said, well, good luck. Here's your permits. And they gave him permits to those two spots. And that was the team. It was my mom, my dad, me, and my two older brothers. And I remember just watching him in action, love on people, preach to people. And there was one memory in particular that I actually, it was so implanted in my head that I started my entrance essay to NYU with this recollection. And it was, we were at Union Square Park, a lot of drug activity there. And all I saw as this little three-year-old boy was a man whose mouth was flowing with blood. I had no idea what had happened. I later on found out he got sliced in a drug deal gone bad. But I just see this man, mouth flowing with blood, and watching my dad run to this man's aid in his time of need, this complete stranger, and help him do whatever he could to help this man. That memory stuck with me. And then just over the years, you know, watching my mom and my dad and constantly love on people and do things for people with, you know, nothing, expecting nothing in return, but just because God loves them and just knowing that they had a message of hope and wanting to share that message. So as a little boy, you know, like on the streets of the Lower East Side of Manhattan, then we wound up going all over the city. But, you know, we'd be out there doing just outreach initiatives and we'd serve food. We later opened a youth center in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, me, my brothers, and a bunch of other young people from the church, and just constantly doing stuff to make the community better. But watching my dad in action since I was a little boy definitely impacted me.
I have a question for you. Looking at your time now as an adult, a retired officer, detective, that childhood Jamie, were you able to do him justice? Because as you mentioned earlier, you wanted to be one of the three. You wanted to serve. When you look back, do you think that you get that young Jamie and say, yeah, I think we did some right here?
Thankfully, I do feel that I did him justice, and I feel like he would be proud. I'm blessed. I'm so blessed, and I'm thankful, you know, for where I am in my life, retired from my career, which I loved, married with three sons of my own now. We were the three J's. I have triple S, Seth, Simon, and Soren. I love my boys and I'm married for 23 years. I actually got married during the academy. And I'm blessed and I've had the opportunity to impact people. And I know that I still have, as long as I have breath in my lungs, I want to share good news. I want to impact the lives of those around me. And I want people to know that God has an awesome plan for their lives. So I would say yes.
You got a story to tell, King. You know, the one thing that I'd like to know a little bit more of. So now you join the force. Were you able to gather other officers who kind of took the same trek as you? They joined the force after 9/11. They had something to do. And if you have stories about that, what were they?
You know what? I don't know that I encountered too many officers who were, who took the test like I did right after 9/11, having been down there, as a civilian, not as a cop, knew a lot of cops that were down there and were also, impacted many who got health issues from down there. My father wound up getting 9/11 related cancer, which he's still battling the effects of that. But it came across so many good cops that really took the job because they wanted to help people. I mean, it's such a, you hear it all the time, you take the job because you want to help people. But truthfully, most of the cops I encountered and worked with genuinely took the job because they wanted to help people and serve their fellow man. Again, I had a blessed career and I got to work with some awesome cops. I'm not sure if I answered that question exactly.
Yeah, no, you did, because many times we are propelled in different ways and some of us don't relay the information. We just go out here, serve, and just have action. Your life was cut out to serve. You don't know where and how you were going to do it, but you knew that it was going to happen. And you and I talked about how God touched you in that way and led your path and say, now is the time. You left Bank of America and went straight to a profession that was totally different than what you went to school for. So it's obvious that you did that for multiple reasons. But I'm wondering if within those times, we do things and we don't understand, but once such a thing, such a tragedy does happen, we kind of get blended into some of these things. And I was wondering if there were some other officers who kind of did that, but to no fault of no one else's, now you're on the force. How dangerous was your job when you first got in?
It's an extremely dangerous job. I mean, I feel like most professions, you don't need to wear a bullet resistant vest. Most people don't leave their family not certain if they're coming home at night. So it's a dangerous job, and I thank God for a praying family, praying parents, praying wife, and I'm so blessed to have been protected throughout my career. In the course of my career, I made over 600 arrests and assisted in over 1,000 other arrests. And I investigated everything from robberies, burglaries to homicides. And, you're dealing with people at their worst. You're dealing with people who are vulnerable. You're dealing with people who feel like they have nothing to lose. It's a dangerous career. I still feel that it's a very admirable career, and I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to have served my city, my beloved New York City, for 20 years.
There's a lot to be said about the risk that involve, and just blurting out numbers here, but I think in 2024 you had about 147 officers who lost their life in the line of work. It's not something to sneeze at, but also I'm wondering the mindset. How challenging is that? The hours, the unknown spots that you may have to visit. How difficult is that when you're working with a partner, maybe a team, or maybe individually, just working, the beat?
It's definitely challenging. I mean, there are some scary moments for sure. Some of the most dangerous things that a cop could do, and we do all the time, a car stops. You never know what you're walking up to. You could have a gun pointed at you as you're approaching a vehicle, or responding to domestic incidents. We respond, we go into the projects, and we got to look out for airmail. We got to make sure nobody's throwing stuff at us. That something lands on me from the roof, I'm losing my life. So knowing that people called us because they needed our help. So we're now responding to someone's calls for help, but we got to make sure that we make it inside and then make sure that we exit the location safely. And then you're approaching a door, you knock on the door. You don't know what's on the other side of that door. You could have a gun pointed at you as you're knocking on the door. So there are so many dangerous aspects to a simple radio run call. There's no such thing as routine, and we're trained to make sure that we don't get so lax where we just get used to, you may have 20 incidents where nothing happens and then you let your guard down, and now something happens on that 21st instance. So you got to make sure that, you know, you never let your guard down. You don't get lax, complacent. Yeah, it's tough, though. It's tough for sure.
Again, big up to the people serving, police officers out there risking your life to protect us. Thank you so much for your time and service. You know, your decision to serve after 9/11 kind of highlights a lot of what we have to deal with. When trauma can inspire someone to bring out their purpose, this really underscores some of the highlights of your silent mental health know-how. Because most of us, when we're responding, you've heard about other athletes and people who have dropped their careers to join the force for a good cause. But your 20 years on the force really gives us a chance to understand firsthand how sometimes untreated stress can go. And thank God that you did have spirituality, you had your family, but there's a lot of fear and like disconnect for a lot of the people who are on the force who don't have those supports. So that's why I'm trying to, you know, think about those people in these times that are still challenging. There are questions about, you're still doing this stressful job. How did you get involved in outreach and working with youth? Then how did you make that work?
So again, I grew up, that the passion for people was kind of instilled in me as a young boy. And you know, even my response, I always wanted to serve people and help people. But even after I joined the force, I was still involved in my church and in ministry. And I know God loves people even more than I could ever. You know, he died for us. And there's so many people that are not living out their what could be their best. I've seen so much wasted potential in the course of my career, before my career and after my career, but definitely in the course of my 20 years, see so many young people throw their lives away without thinking about the consequences. And it was a desire of mine to help change these lives, like to really get them on the right path, to use whatever influence I had to speak wisdom into some of these kids. And I think of a couple right off the top of my head that did not heed my warnings, my instruction, and are dead. Mm. Others that are in prison doing bids. I've been retired 3 years now. There's still people in prison that I put there. And then there are others that I know took my advice and stayed out of trouble and changed their path, changed their course. And then even now, you know, now that I'm retired, I want young people specifically to know that there are so many cops just like me who care about them and who would love for them to never have to encounter the criminal justice system as a perpetrator. You know, we want these kids to succeed. We want the best for them. And we also want them to know that we're just like them in so many more ways than they even realize. I'm a father, I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm a friend. I like playing basketball. I like good music. I like, you know, I like tattoos. I like riding my motorcycle. I'm down to earth. I'm a lot like them. I'm more than just a badge and a gun, and a shield and a uniform. But I'm somebody who is in that position that cares about them. So that's part of what I hope to do with Blue Bridge and even in speaking at some of the public schools I've spoken to, just for these kids to realize that we care about them and they got so much to look forward to, so much potential, and they just gotta make sure they stay focused.
Amazing story. Now, after your 2 decades of service and you take off the badge, what was it the last time that now you present yourself and say, I'm no longer doing this, or you're hanging it up? What was that like for you and your family, obviously?
It was emotional for sure. You spent so much time away from your family. For my two older sons, their entire life to that point, I was a cop. So that's all they knew. And then I had my baby, who was not going to know me as a cop. And so that was kind of weird. I took pride in what I did. I took pride in my boys being able to say what their dad did. I know they took pride in my career. So it was weird, but I was also happy for them. Over the years, they've experienced some of the stresses of having a cop dad, and my wife being a cop wife, just some of the tensions. And they've seen, just some of the stress and tension on their dad. And so I was happy for them that they didn't have to carry that weight anymore. I definitely miss aspects of the job. I miss the camaraderie. I miss my coworkers and my friends. But I knew that God's plan for me wasn't done when I retired. Mm. So it was actually shortly after that I became the youth leader at my church. And I knew that, just like I believe God has a plan for everybody, I know the devil also has a plan. His plan is to kill, steal, and destroy. God's plan is the opposite. He's got a perfect plan to prosper us, not to harm us, one that gives us a hope and a future. And I know once I said yes to being the youth leader, I know the devil was pissed off, because it was 2 days after I retired that I got into a motorcycle accident. Mm. And my middle son was actually with me. And, it was traumatizing. My bike got totaled, and I got banged up. My son miraculously got minimal injuries. I took the brunt of it, thank God. But even me, I had no broken bones. I have road rash and scars, and I was banged up. But, I know God protected me. And I knew he wasn't done with me. And I wasn't going to let the devil win, and went on to be the youth leader, and thankfully build relationships with a bunch of youth and, at my local church and in my area where I lived. So again, here I am now relocated, and I know he still has a plan for me. So I'm eager for whatever it is.
Talk that talk. You know, when we're referencing youth and navigating their own anxieties, and you're wearing a badge, you symbolize something for our communities, obviously, and you know that. You understand that being a person of the law represents different things for different people. But for our youth especially, there's something authentic about mentorship, and you have experience with working the communities, being from the community, being immersed in it. That firsthand experience really earns the trust of your community members, and you model showing resilience and not really the tough guy kind, the kind of I'm here to learn. And now you've opened up to share your work with the youth ministry. How prevalent is spirituality in the force, and were you able to be comfortable in your own spirituality, if you will, during your tenure as a police officer?
I was. I had no shame in my game, so to speak. Everyone knew that I was a Christian, that I went to church, that I didn't. No, they never saw me drunk. I even spoke a little different. And I took pride in that. I never wanted to be just like everyone else. Even my appearance, I kind of look a little different and whatever. But I took pride in people knowing there was something different about me. I certainly encountered other Christian officers, and I know, it is such a tough, stressful career. I don't even. I'm so thankful that I'm still married. Yes, that I that he protected me physically, but that my family is still, I have a great relationship with my boys. And I feel for any officer who doesn't have that faith support, that spiritual component. So, I mean, it is prevalent, not as much as I would like it to be. I wish it was. But yeah, I mean, that was crucial for me throughout my career. I mean, even when I tell people the ages of my kids, 21, 18, and 4, it's so common for cop marriages to end in divorce and for cops to start over. So I know they're assuming that I got divorced and remarried just by the ages of my kids. So I usually beat them to the punch and say, nah, same baby mama, been married for 3 years.
Yes.
But I take pride in that too. And, you know, it was tough. There was some trying times and being working so much overtime, being called in. I'll be in bed with my wife. We just find the movie to watch. And I get a call from the office. This guy that I'm looking for a robbery just got picked up. And now I got to go in and charge him with my case. And, you know, so there were a lot of missed moments in my boys' lives. And now I really want to just capitalize on all those moments with my little guy. But again, I'm blessed that I made it through and I still have a relationship, a great relationship with my family.
And you got loads in the tank, King. There's a lot for you to offer too. I know that you becoming a leader for young people at your church is very important, sort of like dad passed it on to you and your brothers, and you guys have really taken on the life of continuing this work. You know, teenagers, you got a little 5 seconds, if you're lucky, to have their attention, and they can spot who's authentic very quickly. Mm-hmm. What do you think makes you or what about you makes them trust you or have a connection with you?
I always treat everyone with respect. I know I said it before, but I know God loves that person way more than I ever could. And that's God's child. So I always treat everyone with respect, even the perpetrators that I would arrest. You know, there were times where I would arrest someone for a really messed up crime. And you know, yeah, you kind of have to fight the urge. You want to just take things into your own hands. Not only would that jeopardize the case, but it's going to cause problems that I didn't want. But you treat everyone with respect. And I encountered guys that I arrested, and then I would see them in the street down the road, and they, you know, they'd give me a pound. They'd appreciate the way I interacted with them. Whoever I could, you know, share some words of advice, wisdom, encouragement to steer them on the right path, I would. And, you know, they people could sense genuine. They could also sense fake. So, you know, when you genuinely care for people and you want the best for people, people could see that and they know that. In short, I would say it's all about just being genuine and treating people with respect.
Yeah, I would probably bring in a couple of words like there's a sense of belonging and consistency that you're bringing to safe spaces. And I think as a positive role model, you are bringing in protective factors that support maybe something they're dealing with right now, maybe something that they were dealing with and you spoke to it by sharing a story from the field that kind of brings them to, wow, you know what? My situation isn't all that bad. When I get to hear someone who really does look like me and talks like me to share their own experience, it's like we say in the streets, you know, real recognizes real.
Yeah.
If you had a chance to speak to every high school student in America, school by school, what is the truth that you want them to leave your talk from or for them to carry with?
I want them all to know that they have so much potential, and they, each and every one of them, can change the lives of all of those around them. And also that it's never too early to start thinking about legacy. you know, it could be too late to start thinking about legacy. There's people on their deathbed that wished they left a different legacy or a better legacy. But even in, you know, legacy is usually a long-term thing. But I mean, I talk to these high school kids. I'm like, leave your high school in a way where people are going to not be so happy that you left, but they're going to wish you were still there and that they're going to miss you. You know, have a good reputation. Think about what kind of reputation you're leaving. What mark are you leaving, you know, in whatever circle that you're in when you are no longer there, you know? So I try to get people to, young people specifically, to really think about that. Think about, what kind of reputation do I want to have? What kind of legacy do I want to leave this school with, this college with, this job with, this career with? So,
could you, like, you've encountered so many youth during your journey in many walks of life, but did you think about a story? Can you tell us about a moment where a young person not only reminded you of why you're doing this work, but a story that you still carry with you as you continue to do the work with Blue Bridge and this community work? Can you think of a story that's impacted you that from time to time, even though you have your boys, that you think about this youth?
I have some tragic things that come to mind reminding me why I do this. I think of this one young man that I, 19 years old, that I arrested for murder. And remembering seeing his beautiful little toddler daughter in the courtroom every day during the trial. And he gets sentenced 20 to 25 years. So knowing he's one that got away, that threw his future away, another kid that I arrested at 12 years old for attempted robbery. And I talked to him and tried to encourage him, and he did not heed my instruction. And he wound up getting into an altercation a couple of years later, got stabbed and killed, and is no longer here. So I see those, and those remind me why I keep trying to reach those that do listen and will listen. And in my church, I was the my wife and I were the youth leaders for 3 years, and we just finished that because we just relocated to Florida. But they had a little send off for us, and you know, sometimes you don't realize the impact that you have. You wonder who, you know. I would interact with them every Friday night at the youth group, and you know, you wonder which one of them it's resonating with, if any. And man, hearing from all of them, I was so touched and humbled and in tears, hearing the impact that we actually had, my wife and I. And so that's, you know, that's why I keep going and keep doing this, because we are making an impact and, you know, changing lives and helping them to realize God's plan for their lives. So that's what it's all about.
Doing your work with youth, and you just shared a story. Thank you so much for sharing such an impactful story. But is it customary for you and your wife, or maybe you, to go visit youth who are incarcerated after they were working with you and they made a mistake? Is it customary for you? You could share some of that.
So it's actually not something that I've done too much of during my career. But it is absolutely something that I would consider doing now. I know the church that I'm currently attending, they do have a prison ministry, which I'm considering joining. You know, I would imagine there's not too many cops or retired cops that are going to prisons to speak to, you know, to the inmates. But it's something that I'm open to doing and would be honored to do. So I haven't really had the opportunity just yet, but I do plan on doing that.
Talk to us about what inspired you to create Blue Bridge.
So there were several points in my 20-year career where, you know, there'd be a few highly publicized incidents that made police look horrible, and there'd be riots, and you know, and then it just, I felt like everybody would paint the police with a broad brush, and we were all the bad guy, and it was heartbreaking. So I feel like over the years, definitely from when I started to when I ended, police, I feel, are viewed differently, unfortunately, by a lot of people. Not everybody, obviously. I know there are so many people that appreciate what we do, and that means the world to us. But I feel like, especially in inner city communities, they just don't. They know what they hear, and what they, you know, they'll have this one horrible incident or tragic incident that will be, now with social media, forget it. It's in front of their face constantly, and they won't hear about the thousands of positive interactions every day throughout the country that nobody hears about. But there are so many positive interactions every single day happening throughout the country by good cops doing good police work, oftentimes arresting really bad dudes that need to be taken off the street, and helping so many people. So I just kind of wanted to shed a light on that. And again, just let people realize that we are more than a uniform and a badge. And we're just with so much, we have so much more in common. They, you know, nobody wants to be judged for, you know, a uniform, the color of their skin, for anything, their gender. So in the same way, you know, I just want people to realize that we're really humans. I have a family that it was of utmost importance that I made it home to my wife and my kids at the end of every shift. And I was going to do whatever I had to do to make sure that I saw my wife and kids at the end of every shift, which sometimes turned into two and three shifts, you know, consecutive. So it would sometimes be a long time, but I was going home, you know, and it was tough. It was dangerous, and it was frustrating at times, but I had to, you know, push through. And I just, that was really what got Blue Bridge going, just wanting to bridge that divide, because there was definitely a divide that developed over the 20 years that I had.
I mean, for sure. Unfortunately, I really can't tell you if the root cause came from what we often hear about: racism, gender conflict. Is it crime itself? Is it poverty? But the misconceptions, like the streets are unkind. There's a divide between law enforcement and the community, and you don't know who to really trust and when to do that. And I know that when you're working with youth, even though that they can't fully make up their minds, they have their own kind of way of thinking of what they were learned or are being taught to value. So it's a very difficult lift. Mm-hmm. And I know that you being part of this church and doing the work for a community really often hits you, instill that kind of, someone has to pick side, as good and evil, or good versus evil. So there's a lot to be said about that. Who mentors you when you need an opportunity for some grounding, and what do you do, friend?
So I'm thankful to have a good support system. Obviously, my father, my parents have been my lifelong pastors, and I know I can always go to them with anything. And I have throughout my career. I've my brothers, my two older brothers, who are both pastors themselves. So I have, and then I have, you know, a pastor in a church. I was the last church that I was going to, where I was the youth leader, was north of New York City. And I had pastors there that I knew I could talk to and pray with and get guidance from. And now I'm in another church down here in Florida, and I again have a good support system. So that's been huge for me. I know I can count on them and get sound advice and get prayers whenever I need them, for sure.
You know, I am honored that we have met, Jamie, and we're going to stay true to our words to stay connected, because there's so much things that we do in similar fashion, having the big heart, worrying about others first. But I also hear so much about what you do to bring hope and instill that. What do you hope people, and just looking back at this and saying, what do you want people to think about when they hear about Blue Bridge 50 years later? What do you want them to know?
I want people to know that it truly did bridge that divide, that people, civilians, young people, inner city communities, urban kids really did get to understand that there's so many cops just like me who love them and care about them. And maybe they themselves went on to become cops or whatever they choose to do. I want them to know that they could be whatever they want to be, and that they did not throw their life away, that they did not waste their potential. So just that we made an impact, that people went on to live up to their full potential.
Blue Bridge. You know, we didn't get an opportunity to really talk about this, and I really want to go back to it. We're sending positive energy to Dad and all of the 9/11 survivors who are dealing with him listening to this show now, and him just watching you and your brothers grow up, watching the 3Js grow up. What do you want to tell Dad right now about where you at and what you plan to do so he can hear you right here?
Dad, I love you and I'm proud of you, and thank you for inspiring me. Thank you for being true to God and to Mom and the family and to people. Thank you for just the example and the work ethic that you instilled in me. And I hope I made you proud, and I'm going to continue to love on people and serve people, and to live for God as long as I have breath in my lungs. Yeah, so I hope I make you proud.
Listen up, brother. I mean, Blue Bridge is just a template when you can bring law enforcement and youth together. It is people first. It's bringing and breaking that cycle of mistrust to kind of break wide open. It's not easy work, because in intervention, you just don't stop problems, right? It's about building and striking out and having errors and relationship and crises. All these things have to happen so that you can be able to build these programs. But there's a part about you that really humanizes what officers really should stand for. And I think that's what I want to, you know, our listeners to really empower and listen into your voice, that what you care about the most is young people, because you want to create this long-term plan to benefit them, to live a life without fear, no matter what profession they decide, but to be free and to live a life that's free of stress and this hopelessness that sometimes our communities have to deal with. And that's why I'm really applauding you and really honored that you've joined our platform today, because you give us an opportunity to really see, you know what? Sometimes we are worried about things that we have no control over. We start concerning ourselves about plights and things that don't really have nothing to do with us. And we take on this because of the value, just because of what we look like or what may have been shared on TV or social media that really doesn't speak to it. So I really want people to listen in, that there are a lot of people out here just like yourself that are bringing the future to our youth, and that has to be lifted up. Now that you make it to Florida, what's your next step in kind of getting this movement, and how can we support you in any way?
Well, thank you for that. So this has been a whirlwind of a month. We're not even Florida residents for a full month yet, still getting settled in.
Get stopped by the cops is all I got to say.
But you know what? I'm honestly praying about it. I'm praying to God for direction and guidance, because as I said, I know He does have a plan. I know he led us to Florida. We're not in Florida just to retire and to be in the sunshine, because I never, as I mentioned to you earlier, I never wanted to retire to Florida, to move to Florida. It was a vacation place, you know. But he changed my heart earlier this year, and I know he's got a plan. So I'm praying about it. I do know I want to use my voice and whatever influence I have and share that. And I want people to recognize their full potential and to live up to that. So we'll see. We will see.
You know, the future of prevention lies through connection. So as I mentioned to you, whatever I can do to support, whatever the people from Florida can do to support, I'm sure that they will rally around you, because you bring this realness into your talks that will uplift and move things that were probably not built to move. And I really have faith in what you're able to do. What do you do for self-care amongst all these things that you are probably doing throughout your day?
I love spending time with my family, with my boys, with my wife, go on the occasional date night when we get a chance. But I love to ride my Harley. I got a new Harley Davidson. I like to ride that. And I love to play basketball with my boys. Go to church. That's really, I'm a family guy. I don't do much partying, never been into clubs and bars and that whole scene. But yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, because self-care is so important, especially to someone who has dedicated their physicality and their emotional strength for so many years, 20 years and counting, because still your work is undone. Mm-hmm. There's so much that you still have to do. If you could go back and give yourself some advice, now that you know all the things that you know, what will you tell this young Jamie?
Enjoy every moment, embrace every moment, and don't sweat everything. Don't stress, because God's got you. He's going to see you through whatever situation you face. And he truly has taken such good care of me and my family. He's so faithful. Even when we are not, he's so faithful. So just that little reminder to know everything's going to work out.
That's what I'm talking about. The floor is yours, Jamie. Before we let you go, tell us whatever you want us to hear about your next steps, the youth, the movement, Blue Bridge.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really do appreciate it. I am looking forward to, interacting with more young people down here in Florida, whether it be in the public school system, colleges, or even in the prison system. Sharing whatever I can, sharing some of my experiences of the things that I've seen and encountered, and people that did it the wrong way, people that did it the right way. And I'm excited for what God has in store. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm excited for what he's got in store. Mm.
Unity is an important facet of building solid teams at all levels. You know, leaders trust others by believing that everything is possible. All problems do have solutions. Your support system will help you see through these things some way, somehow. Let's not let pride get in the way of our unified team successes. Don't let pride stop you from living your dreams. Don't let anyone step into your dreams with their nightmares. Because on this platform it was built. Because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. And this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you real soon. We're out. Jamie, thank you so much for such an amazing conversation, King.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
For sure. Talk to you soon.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you.
Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde De La Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, Mamá. Te extraño mucho.